Welcome, everyone, to Music Junkies, a podcast about people sharing extraordinary stories about how music has impacted their lives.
Welcome, everyone, to Music Junkies. I'm your host, Annette Smith, and our guest today is a singer-songwriter. He has performed for nearly two decades. That is so impressive. Recently embarking on a new adventure as a solo artist, he has channeled his influences from the music he grew up with into his latest collection, featuring songs and stories that touch the theme of love, loss, and redemption. Matthew, I'm so excited to have you a part of the podcast. I love that you just dropped your new EP, which we're going to talk about. I love your playlist. I think it's going to be so much fun going through your songs that inspire you. So welcome so much to Music Junkies.
I'm a huge fan of the show. So even just being able to hang, you're kind of a celebrity to me. So I'm really happy to be a part of it. I'm honored. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So before we get started and dive into all your stories, what was your experience putting your playlist together for me today?
I went straight for the heart. You know, I at one point I kind of thought maybe I've got to try to seem a little cooler than I actually am. Not going to happen. Anyone that knows me is just, it's all cheesy, straight from the heart. I tell people way too many times how much I love them. And when I put this playlist together, I was kind of going down memory lane and thinking about seminal points in my life that I think kind of connected me and made me who I am, not only as an artist, but as the empathetic fool that I am right now. So I think that dictates my playlist perfectly, really.
I like that you said it. So you are really putting this playlist together with a certain outcome, which that is really the first I've ever really heard. Most people are like, okay, I started with Kenny Rogers, Gambler, for some reason that inspired me for whatever. And then now I'm on Kiss because I can't get out of being 14 years old because the rabbit hole I'm going down is so deep. So yeah, it's interesting that you spent like one, you know, your playlist is about one certain kind of aspect. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I'd also say that it's chronological. I think that's important that I started basically from my first concert experience right up until probably my last. So memory wise, I was just thinking of seminal moments in my life. And that was how I wanted to dictate the map that we're going to go, you know, the treasure map of fun tonight.
I love it. All right, let's get started on your first song. You ready?
I'm ready.
Like Anne Marie, you're the first. I'm going to, you know, I've probably did, I don't know, 400 shows. First
right.
Anne Marie. It's weird. I would have not thought that at all. But looking back, I was like, wow, cool. So,
well, and you're Canadian, right? You're in Calgary.
Yeah,
is that true? Right.
So
I think it's funny, even just last night at a show I was playing last night, someone was talking about Gordon Lightfoot. And I kind of think like, oh no, is that the picture that people paint about us? You know what I mean? It's all just, you know, and then I'm like, oh, the very first song I picked was Anne Murray. So now I am that guy. But so listen, this is such, you know, a tribute. She's still with me. I don't want to sound like she's not, but to my mother, when my parents were together, he put up with a lot of musical bullshit really. But, Anne Murray was the very first concert experience that I ever had. So there's this magical venue called the O'Keeffe Center in Toronto. And I just remember that night being, I was probably 6 or 7 years old, maybe six. And I remember the night was like, we went out to this magical restaurant that was, you know, fine dining and people wearing, you know, shirt and tie to serve us. And then to see someone on stage just provoking such emotion. And I remember looking at my dad and him like rolling his eyes like, oh God, here we go. But I loved it. I loved every moment. I loved seeing the effect that it had on my mom. I remember my sister and I going to the concession stand at like the break between sets. And it was just my very first concert experience, but it was really, really magical. So I had to start off the list with Anne Murray for sure.
So how different were your parents music taste?
Well, as we get down the line, you'll see that there was a few things that connected them and us and my and my musical palette. I will say that my mom still loves rock and roll. My mom is the world's biggest Blue Rodeo fan. She has Cuddy Fan as her license plate. I've been there when she's talked to him. There may be a restraining order now. I'm not, you know, at liberty to say, but, you know, so she still loves rock and roll. She loves Huey. My dad is more of a little bit more of a Pink Floyd kind of guy. I think we've got some of that on the list too.
Yeah.
But there was certainly that connection where my parents were both, let's take kids to concerts kind of parents. And that's, I'm proud to say that's who I am as well. So yeah, they still met somewhere in the middle for sure.
Did you guys sit at that concert or did you stand at that concert?
At the Anne Murray one, we sat. It was like more of a theater kind of, yeah. Like almost if you were going to see a play type of thing. But down the playlist and down the line, we were front row and center for some of the best concert experiences of my life. So we'll get there too.
I love that your parents took you to concerts. I was, you know, I grew up with music. And that was the biggest thing for me, was to be able to take our kids to anything and everything, no matter whatever they wanted. We make it kind of an annual thing to go to like raves and all of this stuff. And they think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And we have so much. I feel like I have more fun, like, because I grew up in that kind of rave area. Like,
yeah.
Where I'm like, are we going to get some ecstasy and do this? And they're like,
yeah,
we're just going to like sit back. And I'm like, I never sat back and watched a concert. Like, I was bleeding, sweating, front row, you know, with all the t-shirts on. And
if you don't do it that way, yeah, if you don't do it that way, you're doing it wrong, you know. And that's just it, you know. It's bumps and bruises as part of not only the live music experience, but from a performer standpoint, at any time that I can bring my family, let's go. I want them, you know, right up front and center at any time that they possibly can. No, I was definitely like in the family that was like, we're going to a concert. Here we go. Yeah. Yes.
I love it so much. I actually just booked, sounds so crazy, but Quiet Riot is coming to one of the casinos here. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm so going to Quiet Riot. And
come on, feel the noise, baby.
For sure.
Yeah.
Can't even wait. So I'm excited.
I'm excited for you. Is your husband dreading it?
He's dreading. I drank him like during COVID, when COVID kind of maybe it just hit. But I used to love Platinum Blonde.
And oh, yeah.
Platinum Blonde came to the same casino. And it is like the worst snowstorm in the entire planet in Calgary. And I am so upset. I'm like, downstairs, I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. I want to go see these guys. And like a half an hour, my husband's like, okay, let's just go. And there was literally nobody on the highway. Like, it was us going to Platinum Blonde. We show up.
And the show still happened, though? The show still happened.
Yes. And there was like, yeah, I don't know, 2,000 45, 55 bloated men with blonde hair and tight, yep, Platinum Blonde t-shirts.
I get it. Third row.
And I was like having so much fun. And my husband's like, this is a lot. You've dragged me to a lot of shows, but this one is a lot for me to handle.
I love it. In fact, I remember seeing The Cure and it was the same crowd, only everyone was wearing like lipstick and mascara. A sea of black t-shirts and a bunch of dudes that were like 50 looking like Robert Smith. And it was like the best night ever. So I sympathize and I love it at the same time.
All right. Mm-hmm. This guy has played in Nanaimo, where I'm originally from, a million times. So I love that you have.
Oh, yeah.
I got my first real six string. Hey, Brian Adams. I don't even know where he's from. Is he from Ontario or?
You know, I feel like he is. Like, I feel like I should know that right off the hop. But I've never been, you know, I've never been a diehard Brian Adams fan. But again, this just falls into the chronological thing that I was talking about, because I remember my dad went away to Chicago, of all places. I remember this so vividly. And I think when he was at the airport, like, this is way back in the 80s when he was, like, rocking the Walkman or whatever, right? So, I just remember he came back and he gave my sister Reckless by Brian Adams, and we just played the living shit out of that tape. Like, it was warped and sounded awful by the time we were done with it. And I remember when I was in grade one, we had to do a talent contest, and I played this tennis racket guitar and lip sank to Summer of 69. So I knew right then and there, this was my bag. You know, one day I will be in front of people and this will be a real guitar and I'll know what I'm doing. I don't know if that's the case yet, but yeah, that, you know, he's still obviously, there's not a bad song on that record, in my opinion. I even remember getting Into the Fire, which was the next one for Christmas too. But yeah, here we go. And I'm like the Canadian guy here talking about Anne Murray and Bryan Adams. This gets better, everyone, I promise. But but I'm not embarrassed, because yeah, that was super important to me. I remember that tape got played to death in my house, and I fucking love it. I love it.
We had Bryan Adams and Kim Mitchell at the Civic Arena. Literally, I felt like every 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm originally from Nanaimo, yeah, on the island. So I was nice. Like, the Civic Arena was like right kind of like this big park where they would have fairs and stuff like that. But it was like right by the water. So, which is kind of crazy because, you know, everybody's getting drunk and high and they could just fall right off the edge and fall into the water. But that never happened, which is cool. But I don't know how many times I've seen Bryan Adams. I feel like I've seen him forever. And I love that people have them on their playlist, because I feel like I don't even know what he's doing now.
He's a photographer right now as well, but he's doing like the casino circuit right now. No. And I have friends that just saw him like, you know, a year ago, I think, or something like that. But he's still doing it.
You guys have really good concerts, like in those small venues too, in Toronto.
Yeah, we're pretty blessed. I mean, I'm lucky because I'm not a huge fan of a lot of like, well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I am, but when I want to go to a show, it's normally a band that I haven't seen live yet, unless it's Guided by Voices, which is my favorite band of all time. I've seen them 30 to 40 times. But yeah, I'm like normally the guy that's like small club, like small, intimate, sweaty, you know, Lee's Palace, the Horseshoe type of thing is kind of more my vibe. Last year, we'll get to it on the playlist as well, but I saw like one summer concert at the big amphitheater in Toronto, which is called the Budweiser Stage, you know, corporate rock and roll.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I mean, my wife and I have seen Coldplay once before, like in the big, you know, the big fucking ordeal, but we don't really do a lot of that. It's normally like, yeah, I normally go and rock out with the kids in the club. You know, the little guys. Yeah.
No, I think that's awesome. My girlfriend and I just went and seen Kiss in November.
And you're lucky. That's it.
I'm telling you, I didn't even know this, but I got an email and it's like, because she lives in Red Deer. So I'm like, okay, you got to be here before 3 o'clock because the show starts. You know, we got to get down there early, have some drinks. We're going to like kiss out her face and do all this crazy stuff. And then I had to phone her like an hour later. I go, apparently I got VIP tickets, and I had no idea that I bought VIP tickets, but it was like an intimate concert.
So that's awesome.
There's only 100 of us.
Oh my God.
We got to like ask questions back and forth and talk to them, and they gave us their picks, and they had no makeup on. So it was like super intimate. It was like really cool. And then we got to obviously perform with all their, but it was like the 80s rock show ever. But it was funny. It was awesome, but it was funny because I'd look at Autumn and I'd be like, that's super cheesy 80s, but it's so fucking cool. Like, you flamed out of your guitar. Like,
yeah,
absolutely,
man.
Let's go. That's so fun.
Dude, I saw like footage of them. I think it was in LA, and like Gene like did a zip line from one platform to another. You know what I mean? Like over a sea of people. Like, isn't Paul like, aren't they like fucking in their 70s or something?
They don't even look it.
That's crazy. It's amazing. And now they're holograms now or something, right? So they're no longer doing it as far. So you got in. Listen, you got to see them.
Yeah.
You're very lucky.
It felt like just the most bizarre show either. Like people were like, I can't believe you guys are sitting so close, because they have like, I don't know, maybe 200 heaters facing you this way, and they just blow flames out. So we were dying. Like we had like t-shirts on. We were like dying. Like I was afraid that I was going to pop my eyebrows off, and everybody had earplugs in before the show started. I'm like, is it like, are we in for a hell of a ride here or what? I'm like, I don't have earplugs.
They knew something you didn't know.
We're
Those
burning,
are,
and our ears are dead. We're like,
yeah, the Kiss Army knew something that you didn't know, clearly. I'm
oh,
really glad that
so
you got to see that. That's amazing. That's fucking great. Wow.
you are going to be the first two, and I love Huey Lewis. This reminds me, for me, like just this summer when I was, 11 years old, always listening to
Yeah.
Huey Lewis.
Yeah. My parents took us to so I've always told the story that it was the sports tour, but I think I was four when sports came out. So it was for a record called Small World. But so where our baseball team used to play, the Jays, like the Blue Jays, they used to play in Exhibition Stadium. And Huey came and my parents got front row. So like it was the four of us front row and like jaw drop the entire time. Like, and I've seen him twice. I took my mom to see him at a, at a casino, it's probably 10 years ago now. He's actually not performing anymore because he's deaf. And I think he's got tinnitus and he's lost it in another ear. But yeah, you want to talk about like a moment where you turn around and see a sea of people losing it. That was the show for me, and I still to this day I still listen to all of it. I love the album Four. My kids love it now. My kids love Huey. My daughter's man, my daughter's, yeah, 6 or 7 now. I can't My daughter's 7 years old and I can't believe that, but my son is 9. They both know Huey. Like, yeah, they rock out to Huey with me. So I used to call it a guilty pleasure. Now I'm like, no, loud and proud Huey Lewis for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to listen to them on my Walkman. My grandparents owned a fishing resort when I was growing up, and I would put my Walkman in to go clean the rooms and do all of that stuff. And I would listen to Huey Lewis. It was like this summer thing. That and Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Nice. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's, and just to see, like, Huey never played guitar, right? And like, he would like manhandle the mic, and like, it's so funny because I've seen photos of him back in the day. Like, even when he was 20, he looked like he was 50. It's like, you ever notice that? But like, people back in the day,
Notice that.
like, why were people like, when they were 20, they looked like they were 40 or whatever, But like,
80s were
Huey,
rough on them.
right? It was bad coke. I don't know what it was, but he, for some reason, he was just cool as ice all the time. We had like the tour video. I remember like we bought the program, like Huey Lewis all day for sure, without question.
What was
Yeah.
your favorite MTV music video growing up?
I mean, Heart of Rock and Roll is pretty great. Sledgehammer Peter Gabriel was always like just the there was like a claymation aspect to
Yeah.
it that we always loved. You Might Think by The Cars.
Yeah.
And Rick Ocasek like appears out of the tube of lipstick and turns into a fly.
So
Yeah, like,
creative.
yeah, I have vivid memories. And that again, that was the thing in our house. My dad would like have the VHS tape like full of videos. So it'd be like, it's Friday night, we're watching some videos, or
I
video
love
hits was
that.
coming on. Yeah,
I
yeah.
miss that. I miss MTV.
Remember? Remember when you could actually like watch music stuff on TV?
Think of
Like,
how much music we like were exposed to.
oh yeah, it was the best. I remember like they would have intimate and interactive where the artist would come in like to the studio and there'd be a sea of people, an
Know.
audience. And then yeah, like I remember the Pepsi Power Hour when I was a kid. That was like Lee Aaron and
Yes.
like Anthrax and shit. And I was like, I come home and watch Poison videos when I was in grade, 2 and 3 or whatever. It was like, yeah, that's a magical thing too. That has just kind of gone the way of the dodo as far as, how we consume now.
It's
It's,
too
yeah.
bad.
I'm gonna get bummed out. I don't want, let's stay nostalgic instead of depressed. Let's stay nostalgic.
Are you a boob or
Okay.
butt guy?
I mean, I'm She'll kill me to say this, but I'm blessed because I got a bit of both. I've been with my wife for I've been with my wife for 20 years, so I would probably have to say I'm a butt guy. I think probably.
I love it. I love it. 20 years. Wow.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What was the first thing that attracted you to her?
Well, she is a knockout, beautiful blonde. We worked at a restaurant together first, and she's a little bit younger than me, but my little brother knew her. And I remember coming into work, and I was petrified because this gorgeous young blonde was going to train me. She's still training me on many, many aspects of my life. But her personality, and we were friends before it all kind of, you know, went down the way it did. But she's just really funny. And I loved it because her dad was an OHL player. So he's a hockey player. And I remember she was like spitballing back and forth with all the, you know, the other guys about talking about the hockey game last night. And I know nothing about hockey, even to this day. I'm like the anti that, right? But I just remember like sitting in the corner, like, how does this hot girl know all this cool shit, you know? And even to this day, she's like that too. So, but yeah, 20 years, we've been married for almost 14. And yeah, like just the love of my life. I'm head over heels more now than ever. So
I love it works. That. And you guys have a couple kids.
We have a couple kids. We've got three cats and 10 chickens as well. I'm on 5 acres. Yeah. My other girls that are outside right now.
Yeah. Now, did you always have 10 chickens or did you have 15 and then the cat got a couple or?
I think it was like 12 at time. Yeah. We've had some come and go, but like we now, especially into the wintertime, we keep them in, you know, in their house, basically. They got like chicken condo outside, but yeah, I remember one day in the summertime, my wife screaming, I'm like, what's going on? Like fox, you know? So yeah, it happens out here. And I wouldn't say this isn't, I mean, we're in the country compared to where we've lived before, but we're on 5 acres and it's free where, you know, it feels free and beautiful out here. So
yeah get away from Toronto for sure.
I love going in, but I love getting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next song.
Yep.
Bruce Springsteen. I'm always curious with that album cover. Who convinced him to do this? You know, because you got to be pretty secure. You got to be like, you know, back in the day, it's like, okay, let's just put your ass on a cover and just see what happens. Nowadays, they wouldn't even do that. It'd be like, oh, we can't do that.
Well, it'd be, you know, it's either that or on the Stones when, what is it, Sticky Fit? What is the record where it's got the zipper? It's like the crotch, right?
So I just put that out on Music Junkies the other day.
Yeah, right. I mean, and which is so great, but you're right. I mean, now it's, yeah, it's what a, and I mean, it's all, yeah, listen, I don't, again, I'm not going to get bummed out about the industry the way it is now, but that record, you know, I put that one right up next to Reckless as well as in terms of how much it got played. And everywhere that you went in the 80s was, you know, the boss or whatever. But even to this day, I just finished this really great book about Nebraska and the making of Nebraska. And the folklore and the fact that he is not only still doing it, but the way that that record was shaped and how it became just this huge soundtrack and the production on it to this day. I mean, like, that's Max Weinberg on the drums, you know, the band, you know, Little Stevie, just the whole thing, just to me, is just such this fairy tale of such a great record about people working their asses off and the economy tanking. And I mean, it still rings true today to me. But that particular song, Downbound Train, to me is just the most haunting. There's this little break in the song that still just makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And that was the one a lot of people would go to. I mean, I cover I'm on Fire. I mean, everybody at an open mic, everybody plays that at the open mic, and it's the only, you know, but yeah, that record to me is just, I still listen to it all the time. And I've got like, it's like the Breakfast in America for record collectors. Everybody has like 4 copies of Born in the USA because they printed, you know, 3 billion copies. But yeah, I still love it. I listen to it all the time. And that song in particular, absolutely.
So I want to take you back, obviously, growing up in the 80s. What is one fashion sense that you would love to just kind of see come back?
I'm like, I don't know if it ever left me. Because there's photos of me when I was 8 years old, and I kind of look and dress the exact same now. I was still wearing chucks, high top chucks, but I do remember like Club Monaco back in the day. I remember all the old, the older kids were rocking Varney and Club Monaco, or I remember my older brother had a, remember a body glove?
Yeah, and chip and pepper.
Chip and Pepper, exactly. Yeah. Surf wax t-shirts. And
Yeah.
I used to skateboard as well. Like I used to think I could skateboard. I still tell my kids I was a skater, but like no. I sat on the curb. But I always kind of loved the t-shirt culture of everything back in the day, because now being in my 40s, I wear a lot of hooded sweatshirts even in the summertime now. But I think the 80s was kind of a magical time, going to parties and seeing how much hairspray and how many people really like paid attention to, especially like the big gaudy earrings on the women and stuff, or on the girls, back in the day. It's still a mesmerizing time for me to think about. Everybody used to talk about growing up in the 60s and the 70s, and it's like, no, the 80s were kind of the best time to be a kid, in my opinion. And I still love music, even as like I'm going through this list. I love music right from the time that I even knew what it was. So
Yeah.
I still connect with all of it.
It's interesting because I really connect with all of that too. But where kind of my di disconnect kind of comes in a little bit is now, right?
Right.
Not a lot really kind of speaks out to me where I'm like, oh my God, this artist is absolutely amazing. They just came, they're brand new to 2021 to today
Right.
kind of thing. I still venture away in the past. Even though I listen to nowadays music, but I just sometimes feel like there's just something missing. I don't know what it is, but sometimes I feel like there is something missing. I feel like authenticness sometimes
Yeah.
or
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lack of authenticity, I think, but at the same time, I'm going back. I'm listening to music from the 40s now. I'm in my, the older I get, I go a little deep, do a deep dive in the jazz section at the record store now too, and I love piano jazz. I don't listen to rock music unless I can listen to it loud, whether it's through cans, or
Yeah.
earphones. I can't just have it on in the background. Normally, even to get the kids out of school or whatever, I'll put on, Bill Evans, or when it's Christmas, the Vince Guaraldi, Christmas record or whatever. But I'm going way back now, not even classic rock. And it's funny, I just had this conversation with someone the other day. Like, Nirvana is classic rock, right? To our kids, when I was their age, that was the Zeppelin, that was the Floyd,
Yeah.
that was the Stones or whatever, going way back. But now it's like Pearl Jam and Nirvana is classic rock. And that to me is mind blowing.
It is mind-blowing. So you were a skater growing up in elementary high school?
The especially once I got into high school, I started to, there was, there was always like, I take pride in the fact of thinking that I was kind of friends with everybody, although it was all, also very cliquey or whatever, cliquey in high school. But I was always the one where I'd be at a party, someone would be like, go get Holpie. Cause I would, I was the guy that would get someone into the party. And I loved the skateboard culture because it wasn't tough guy culture. I loved hip hop music as well. And I still really love hip hop music, especially 90s hip hop music. But there was kind of a connection to a tough guy thing that I've never been. I've always been a lover, not a fighter. But the skateboard thing kind of lent itself to music. A lot of the people that I used to skate with ended up being in bands, or songwriters. Or there was always someone that had, like, now it's Bluetooth everything. You can bring a Bluetooth speaker. I've got one in my bathroom right now, and but back in the day, like, people would like bring speakers hooked up to like a Discman or whatever, or like a great big boom box. And we would just, take over a parking lot. And I just, that's a really great little memory for me too. It wasn't as much as of me trying to be a good technical skateboarder as much as it was the culture and watching other people that actually really knew what they were doing. And there was always great music, you know, that went along with it. And skate videos too.
Yeah.
We used to go to people's houses to watch skate videos, and you would hear bands and be like, what is that? Who's that? And even still, it might be everything from Black Flag to, you know, bands like Granddaddy that I love even to this day. But it was more about the culture than like, I was an awful skateboarder. Like,
awful. What kind of music, like what hip hop music did you listen to, or punk music did you listen to back then?
Well, hip hop, certainly Wu-Tang, Mobb Deep. I mean, I'll hate myself when I get off this, because there was just so many, many, many hip hop artists that I used to love. But yeah, as far as the Wu-Tang camp went, like I know the Liquid Swords record front to back by the GZA, ODB. And yeah, like, I mean, the 90s was just every one of my friends, that's all they listened. There was like one camp of us that was like the Pumpkins camp. And then another one that was like the big time into the Brit pop or the Brit rock, you know, camp or whatever. Still some of those friends that I love to this day, that's all they listen to is Oasis and Stone Roses and all that kind of stuff. But then this massive part of my high school was just nothing but hip hop. And it's changed a little bit now, obviously, as far as the production goes and the way that hip hop is presented today. But I still go back to some of those records and they absolutely give me chills, you know, like, yeah, that to me is just as important of a memory as, you know, listening to Dark Side of the Moon. The first time that I heard, Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders and stuff like that. It was just as important to me for sure.
Yeah. I love different, like growing up and just, you know, when you're talking to people and they just have like these different experiences of obviously teenage, and I feel like their experiences with who they are and the crowds that they kind of grew up with slowly starts to kind of make who they become as well. So I'm always interested to hear like, oh, how were you in high school? What kind of person were you in high school? Right. What do you think your biggest challenge was in high school?
I think in my early years. So here's the thing. I don't think it was necessarily, I would say not challenging, but more of a regret that I didn't start playing music until really late in life. You know, like I always loved it. And I remember having a 4-track recorder with a friend and stuff when I was maybe in grade 10. But, you know, there was a huge group of these people that I still know today that were in the, you know, in the jazz band and in band that you would like flip your nose up to back in the day. But I'm like, I should have stuck with those people. You know, I was really lucky in grade 9. Actually, I was the drummer in the jazz band and we got to come out your way. We played at the Rocky Mountain Music Festival in Banff, which was an amazing memory anyway, but like, then it suddenly turned into girls and, you know, hanging out and being a stupid teenager instead of like, I should have stuck with, you know, the people that are today probably the more technical players that I know. Like my friend Derek, I remember being in, you know, in band with him in grade 9, and he's the best piano/keyboard player that I know. He's just this muso. And I kicked myself, you know, I should have just been like, you know, fuck these other people. I should be hanging out with the band geeks, you know? And I still feel that way. I would do that right now if I possibly could, but I don't think I have the mental capacity for it. And I know they wouldn't have the mental capacity for me either. So that's for sure. Yeah.
All right. Next song. Pink Floyd.
That song in particular, I still like, no one can talk when it's on. And everyone that knows me has heard this story a million times, but so we were never a movie family. I mean, sure, Back to the Future, you know, the big ones or whatever. But back in the day, my dad's thing, and I remember because my mother worked nights, my dad's thing was, we're going to turn out the lights and put on the strobe light and listen to Dark Side of the Moon front to back, right? So And it scared us in the best way possible, because, you know, the segues with the clock ticking and the laughter and just this, you know, this swirling of sounds and the synths and the, you know, Gilmore. And to this day, it's my, I would say it's the, my favorite record front to back. I don't know that it's the best, but it, nothing takes me on the journey like Dark Side of the Moon. Again, my family loves it. We listen to it, you know, once in a while. But another really cool memory is later on when I was a teenager, I remember, you know how everyone has talked about Laser Floyd, you know, like going to see Laser Floyd. So at the Planetarium in Toronto, like my dad and my stepmom took me to Laser Floyd. And I just remember sitting up and looking at this light show, and Us and Them came on, and I just was on another planet. Like, it was so amazing. And to this day, I would say, like, you know, the Desert Island disc, you know, or whatever, that would, if I could take one, that would probably be it, you know? Yeah.
I love that.
Me too.
What's one thing that your dad taught you about music?
To kind of be to be patient with it. I don't know if you know, like, my dad's my piano player in my band now.
Oh, no way. So,
yeah. So that was one thing that I was really, really excited to be able to invite him to do, because we always had an upright piano in our house. And I remember, like, I do this now, actually, as I think about this, I am my father. Fuck. But, like, I always used to come in and see, like, it'd be like a Friday night or whatever, and I'd come in and my dad would have something cranked on the stereo and he'd be playing bass to it, or he'd be sitting, you know, with a, you know, a Crown Royal at his keyboard and playing along with it. And I still do that stuff too, you know? So yeah, he was just always the one to kind of tell me to experience it and, like, be patient with it. Or, like, his thing would be, stop, listen to this part. So I remember playing back my records for him, the first full length, you know, CD that I put out. I remember my dad looking at my dad, and he was on, you know, cloud nine with his eyes closed, listening to it. And that's one thing that I will always take with me, is to breathe it in and close your eyes and be the cheese ball that I am when it comes to, yeah, you know, listening to a record.
And I love that you do that, because I feel like I don't know a lot of people in my life where I can play a song and there's certain aspects of that song that I really, really like that have a moving part for me or whatever it is. Or I'm like, oh, wait, just wait. And people, like, and I don't feel like I have a lot of connection with people. Like, I don't, oh, okay, what am I waiting for? Like, what?
It's, oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, fuck, you don't get that part? I feel like I'm so absorbed with music like that. You know, somebody could play a song, I can know it in, like, I always play that stupid thing on TikTok where it's like, guess a song in a note. And my husband just sits there and goes, okay, go. And I'm like, boom, boom, boom. I'm like, my wife, so and I good do that. At that.
Oh, we do that on a road trip. I'll be like, give me any rock and roll trivia. Let's go. And it'll be like 3 hours later. She's like, oh my God, really? Like, I can't get enough of it. Remember Rock and Roll Jeopardy? I should have, like, yeah. I would have crushed Rock and Roll Jeopardy, but now
I know, I feel like I'd kill me in that tune. I'd just be like, let's go, let's challenge. But yet I struggle sometimes, like, I don't get fixated on, you know, Prince was born in 19 whatever.
No, me neither.
Like, I don't know any of that stuff, right, whatsoever, right. So when I even when I started doing this podcast, some of my guests would be like, well, you, I'm like, I don't fucking know, like, that, I have, like, if they start going down that rabbit hole, I'm like, that's really cool that you know that. I don't know that, and I don't, like, my brain is contaminated with every single song that I can guess in a note. That's where my brain capacity with music is.
That's still a gift, though, you know. A lot of people, I'd be the same way, like, give me that first, you know, the first little part of that tune. I'll go head to head with you sometime doing that.
We should.
Let's start a league. I'm in.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
A Zoom league. I'm down.
What was your first instrument you ever played?
So the first one that I seriously played was drums, because everyone else was auditioning to do, like, you know, in public school, everybody else was auditioning to play brass stuff. And I remember I got trombone because my dad played that. I always remember him telling me that he was a trombone player. It's like, I don't want to be a, you know, I want to rock, you know? So even though it was just like, you know, doing a flam or whatever on the drums, but I picked it up pretty easily. And I remember the music teacher saying, you have the coordination, sorry, as I kick my camera, but with my foot on the kick pedal and a hi-hat and playing a beat on the drums. So that was the one that I first took pretty seriously. And then they introduced the option to play bass guitar. So I picked up a, you know, bass guitar in grade 7 and 8 as well. So I was kind of like doing double duties between playing drums and bass. And then I remember my dad went and bought me a Yorkville bass amp and brought it to school. And everyone was like, wow, you know, gathered around to look at this thing. And then it led me into grade 9. I was still playing drums and bass in the band. And I have a drum kit here. My first single that I've released under my own name, that's me on the drum kit on that. But I'm master of none. You know, I can play a little bit of, I don't know if I could play saxophone, but I'm sure I could, you know, if I was left to my own devices, I'm sure I could get something out of it. But my very first one that I ever really took seriously was sitting behind the drum kit, I would say.
I love that. My first was a saxophone, which is funny.
Oh, wow.
And then I loved the drums. I wanted to play the drums. I wanted to learn how to play the drums. And I remember I came into it like a little bit of money. I threw our kids in the backseat of a car. I went to Long and McQuaid and I bought a Pearl kit. I shoved the kit inside the car with the kids. And I took lessons. And I still have that kit downstairs.
Nice. Like, do you ever go down and rock out on
like
it?
Every now and then, but it's been like a long time, but I love it and I'm never selling it. I'll just keep adding to it. My husband plays guitar, so like we jam every now and then, but he plays more guitar than I, but I will never get rid of it. I can't. And I just feel like timing right now is just not right with everything that I have going on. And I'm just, I just can't. My very first song that I ever learned was Lake of Fire. Such an easy drum. So like I know all like lots of AC/DC and like basic stuff, but I'm always have this vision of just, you know, at a concert and the drummer's sick and I get to go and
I still, you know, listen, I still do that. I'll still go to a concert now and I still say that to myself sometimes, like I wonder if that guy's going to break his hand. Does anyone know this song? You know? I still do that now.
That's so funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right, next song. Supertramp. I think these guys just played for New Year's in the casino this year.
Yeah, he's still doing it. I don't know of as far as all of the other members of the band, but that harmonica beginning, you know, the intro to that song falls right in line with the whole thing that I was talking about with the Pink Floyd stuff. My dad had this Live in Paris Supertramp record, and it was the same thing, just that haunting intro. And then when the breakdown happens in the piano part in it, I still listen to that quite often, actually. That's probably one of my top 10 favorite songs, let alone from Supertramp, for sure. And that is on Crime of the Century. Everybody else jumps back to Breakfast in America. But that final answer, School, Supertramp.
What about your wife? What kind of music does your wife listen to?
Certainly not mine.
Hey, so that's a good thing. So when you guys met, you got to explore each other's music a little bit?
Yeah, I meant my own personal music, meaning I don't ever walk into a room and have her playing a Matthew Holby song, that's for sure. She's a little, you know what she is? She's more of like she loves the lyrics. So she's more of a songwriter type of listener. She introduces me to stuff all the time. You know, at one point she was kind of going down the country side of the tracks and then wasn't subscribing to the new country thing. She likes stuff like George Strait, you know, actual outlaw kind of real, you know, real country music, I think, but she likes stuff that I couldn't even, you know, she's got playlists and I'm like, who's this? What's this? And she's got to school me on it. I couldn't tell you one of the artists right now, but yeah, we kind of play well off each other in that, you know, in that department for sure.
I love that. My husband and I, when he was younger than me, when I met him, and I really felt like I knew every type of music, but I didn't really, I listened to old school punk. Like it was more like back in the day when it, like elementary was more like Butthole Surfers and Dead Kennedys and stuff like that.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. Yeah. Jello. Yeah.
His,
for sure.
His punk was more like Rancid, Bouncing Souls. And I never really heard them. So when we met, yeah. And he kind of introduced me to that. Like I loved it. I
so
absolutely
good.
Loved it. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. And I was like huge 80s kind of hair band. You know what I mean? And he was okay with it. But I like still to this day, I'll put something on and he's like, who the fuck is that? And I'm like, oh, it's good. Like Faster Pussycat. And he's like, what?
I remember
so I
that.
Love that. I love to be able to do that because it, you know, I like to hear some of his music and we did that for like so long. We just went to, in May, we went to Punk Rock Bowling. Have you ever heard of Punk Rock Bowling before?
No, but I love it already. That
oh my
so
God,
fun.
You got to go. It's like in Vegas, it's 3.5 days or 4 days and it's all like Rancid and like,
oh my God.
Like,
wow.
There was like they had Dropkick Murphys, Fishbone. There's like 3 days of punk, old school punk bands. And it's like crazy. I took a video because I was going to do this kind of monologue in a mean way, but not really in a mean way, more a comedy way where because all these punk guys are like in wheelchairs and walkers. And I was like, I was just randomly starting to take pictures. And I'm like, what if I just did like this massive video of like, here's Punk Rock Bowling. And it's like all these spike haired dudes with like crutches and like totally out of control, but still making sure their hair is good and their makeup and they, you know, they got their boots on and their kilts on. And I was just like, this is fucking insane. Like, so
it's like something from The Simpsons. I'm picturing like, you know, like Barney, when Barney's supposed to be crusty, you know, or whatever, like a butt hanging out of their mouth and like,
it was
some dude with like his cheek pierced and he's all, you know, they live hard.
Like super long now, no more hoops in them. And there's just like straggly
earlobes, you know, down to here and shit. Yeah. I love it. That sounds amazing.
Sounds smoke sitting in there and you're just like, but
that
so crazy.
Awesome.
Like it was so good. Me first in the Gimme Gimmies and like, it was so amazing. Like it was so much fun. But they have it every year. And then they
That's
have
awesome.
Like pool parties and stuff like that. So it's like an all day event and it's just all old school, crazy punk. And it's like,
you like to party, eh?
Yeah, it was fun.
You still
I never
party,
did that. I love going to things that I feel like might not be around for a long time, but it's like a really cool event or.
Totally.
Yeah. I love experiences. I'd rather like. Good. Buy my husband experiences and go and buy him a shirt or even though I buy him enough bourbon that he can surround himself with, but you know.
Well, I mean, he's, you know, he's only human. He's got to put up with people like us.
That's right. I love it. All right. I love these guys. A lot of people know of the Lemonheads. I really don't.
I mean, he's doing it still. He's not quite all there these days, Evan Dando, but that record in particular, it's funny, the clip of that song that you just played, most people would never know that. People sadly only know the Lemonheads because they redid Mrs. Robinson, I think. But it's a shame about Ray, that record itself. Yeah, I still listen to it to this day. That song right there is called Hannah and Gabby. I played it yesterday. I cover that song in particular. People don't ask me who it is. I don't tell them it's a cover. I would love to think that I wrote that song, but I didn't. But there is a connection to what I do which I would think is probably subconscious, but there's an acoustic element to that record, even on the title track. Like, It's a Shame About Ray, and just so many beautiful pop songs on that record that they just, you know, the whole thing I think is under 40 minutes, and it's probably shorter than that, but there's something about the Lemonheads that the record after that, Come On Feel, that, yeah, that stuff is still probably within my top 10. And I have a friend, Liz, that I went to high school with, and she was kind of my Lemonheads buddy. And I remember It's a Shame About Ray was being played in its entirety in Toronto. He's done it a couple times because there keep, you know, there continues to be the 10-year anniversary of this and that. And I remember saying, I'm going. And or I remember her hitting me up. This is 10 years ago, the first time he did it. And she was like, did you see that this is happening? I'm like, I got tickets. I already got tickets. What are you talking about? Of course. But the last time that they played, he came, and he's got a band, and they still called it the Lemonheads. He's the only original member doing it. In fact, they're putting out new music right now. He's got a brand new single that's already out. The new one comes out on Tuesday next week. But I didn't go, and I had friends that were kind of live texting me from the show. And it wasn't as great as, I'll say this, they weren't having as great of a time as I had hoped. So, but I have seen them a few times, and that record, that song in particular, Hannah and Gabby, that's one of my favorite songs of all time. It's just a beautiful song, a great little story. And it's like, it comes and goes in 3 minutes, and I know how to play it. Yeah.
So walk me through, you're in a band and then you make a decision. Did you make the decision to go solo?
So COVID, you know, I hate the C word, you know, I'd rather use the other C word than that, because
I know
I don't want to be that guy, but that moment in time was different for my family and I than it was for a lot of people. And I think that while everyone was waiting, and, you know, I'm not faulting anybody, but while everyone was just trying to wait to see what we should be doing, I was writing songs. So I had a band. I was going to quote Bryan Adams there, but I'm not going to be that guy. But which I really love. It was a band called Say Ritual. And in fact, I've just kind of rekindled with one of the guys from that band within the last little while. He sent me a message today to say that he really liked one of my new songs. But COVID killed my band. And what happened was, everyone was waiting. Well, I was like, listen, I've got my home studio in a loft. Like, I'm not worried about any of it. You know, I'm not going to ask anyone to mask up and to do the whole shebang. You know, if you're healthy and you feel good, come on over. Let's go. You know, I'm ready to go. So 1 month turned into two turned into, you know, three, I think. And after all was said and done, there was just basically some other, I'm trying to be, you know, kind of diplomatic and polite about it, because for all I know, maybe one of the guys might listen to this, but there was kind of a decision that they were going to continue to play while I was waiting for them, and they were making different music while I was waiting to get back at this project. So I thought, I'm not going to fight about it, but something was telling me it's time to go and do this thing on my own. That way I don't have to really depend on other people as well. And I'm really, really lucky and blessed, because as I told you, my father's my piano player. My drummer that's with me has been with me for 20 plus years. We've been in, you know, we've been in two or three or four bands together. He's my best friend, and he's one of my favorite drummers that I've ever played with, let alone that I know. Like, he's really that great. And, you know, the guys that I play with right now, I will play with them until I can't. They're the nicest guys in the business, and they're just professionals. But when it's your own name, you can, you know, if one guy can't be there, you don't have to put the brakes on. You know, if someone else can learn the songs, then I'll keep going. And in this capacity, I can play solo, you know, solo shows or do solo things from time to time, or, you know, as a duo. But the decision to go it on my own and use my name for the first time, I've never done that before. I always felt the need to hide behind a project name. You know, even when I was on the radio, they didn't use my real last name. So this time I just thought, what do I have to lose? That's who I am. That's my real name. Most people call me Matt. My birth name is Matthew. I thought, I'm going to use my real name and see what happens. And lo and behold, without being that guy, this is the most fun that I've ever had playing music. And it's kind of been the most fruitful. You know, I played festivals this past year, some airplay on the CBC. I'm just the busiest that I've been with music. So a long, long-winded answer to your question. It definitely wasn't what I had planned to do. But, you know, I think that the universe brings things to you for a reason. And I'm just going to keep going. You know, I'm just going to keep doing it. And I'm going to use my name. That's my name.
Yeah. It's pretty cool that you have accepted yourself. And now the universe is accepting that you accepted yourself. And now it's going to bring you the things that you want.
I'm just going to bank on that, you know, just going to keep going. Yeah.
So tell me about, so how many songs have you released this last year?
So last year, here's the thing, right? It's the singles thing that we have to do.
I know, isn't that weird though?
It's so crazy. It's crazy. I mean, and this is coming from the standpoint of someone who's kind of trying to play the game as far as how people consume music now.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you just had Eric on. Eric is working this EP for me, Eric Alper, who I've known forever. I've known him for a long time since I worked in radio. But a lot of people will tell you to continue to drop one song at a time. And you and I are used to putting on a record, or even in the first couple bands that I was in, it was like, we're making an album. And then you release remember a CD? So you'd put out a CD.
Yeah.
So I've been doing the single thing. And last year I put out three singles. The year before that I put out two. And then coming out of the gate, I kind of didn't really heed the same advice and thought, these three songs work well together. And the last thing that I put out was, I wouldn't say it was somber, but it was certainly a little bit more stripped back and kind of a more of a ballad. And this collection of songs that I put out were kind of like rockers. And I've even written in the press release, that first song has got David Gilmour all over it. My lead guitar guy is a guy that I've known for 20 years, and he's with us now, my friend Ken. And like, he's just nailing it. There's guitar solos all over every song. And I'm not that guy. I've never been one to be like, you know, the noodler or whatever. But the parts and the tones and like turning it up, it just lends itself to this collection of songs. So I dropped three songs at one time in the form of a digital EP to start off the year. And here's the other thing too, to be able to afford to record properly is another thing too. So I'm just trying to be smart about the budget. And my producer, Mike Phillips, he's another guy I've known for 20 years. He lives in Peterborough, Ontario, not an hour from here. He and I are partners in crime, and we're just going to keep plugging away. I've got something that's ready to come in March again already. So I'm just, like I keep saying, I just can't stop.
I love it. Yeah. Is your inspiration, your songs, like, you know, a lot of people write about their past, their history, their lives. Do you find that that's how you write, or are they stories about situations?
Yeah, a little, I mean, some, it's kind of a little bit of both columns, to be honest. I'm a big observer, and especially when I have other friends that might be going through something, I won't ever reveal any of that per se, but I've written some stories about people that I know and love and lost. But you know, I try not to really write from a biographical standpoint. In fact, my wife makes me say, like, tell people things are okay. Because a couple of the songs are like, one of the song, you know, the song that is called Big Mouth. It's like, it starts up, the line is like, you know, I fucked up and she found out. You know, she always tells people like, everything's fine. He didn't fuck up. I never found out anything. But, you know, so yeah, I would like to think I'm more of an observer. And I'm trying to write happy songs, which is kind of the toughest thing to do from time to time, is like write happy things. So everything's good. Everything's okay. Right, dear?
Everything's good. Everything's good.
Everything's good.
Right, next song.
When I was little, my father was famous. He was the greatest samurai in the empire. And he is the shogun's decapitator.
Good swords.
Yep. Yep. I've already said everything I got to say about this one, but I'll tell you, I know every word on this record. I just bought it on vinyl like a month ago. I got like the reissue on vinyl. I love it.
So what shows do you have coming up? Call it in the next 6 months that we can come in. Are you just touring in Ontario right now? Or are you going to go across? Like, what is your... Obviously, we all have game plans, but...
Yeah, that would be the dream, to get out of Ontario for sure. I think I'll try to do that for festival season. Applications are already kind of popping out for things to do out of the province. And my brother lives in Vic as well. My brother's in Victoria, so he's always trying to get us to come out there. But yeah, right now, just in support of this EP, I've got another 6 dates in and around Ontario. A couple of things that are... solo things as well. A date in Peterborough, where we lived for a little while. I'm playing in a record shop in my hometown of Oshawa, Ontario, at my friend Will's record shop called Cops Records. And there's a few other things that people can kind of look at the website. My other friend, Christopher Jackson, who's just this amazing songwriter, he is having us come and open for him in Napanee, Ontario. So there's, a few little things here and there. But I wanted to have a handful of dates while we release this thing, just so we can get out and play them, play the songs that are on the EP, and then, a dozen other songs too. But we just played Toronto on Friday, and there's a bunch of other stuff that I'll probably get in trouble. Like, why didn't you plug this? Why didn't you say this?
You can plug it. Just send it to me and I'll plug it all the time. So don't worry about that.
Awesome. I'll send you everything that I got.
Yeah, I love it. And then, awesome. So obviously we can stalk you on Instagram. Do you want to share kind of your social media?
Yeah, Matthew Holpe Music on everything. That's the website as well. And Insta. I'm not a TikToker. I try not to be on Facebook too much, just because I get a little bit of not only the scrolling thing, but it's like I see other people and what they're up to and stuff. And I'm like, oh man, I'm either not busy enough, or I just don't relate to a lot of people anymore.
I don't have time to take pictures of my food. And
yeah,
I do like, that, sometimes my husband wants to stab me in the eye for doing that. But
right. Yeah, I forget that you can be on social media without putting up with everybody else. You can leave something and walk away.
I know.
Like, I can promote stuff without having to be around to see what people think about it.
Yeah.
You know,
one thing I hate about social media is that whole, hey, something's going on in my life, I'm going to post it. And then even though I do a podcast, I just go and post. I'm not like scrolling for hours down the rabbit hole. And
yeah,
if you have something that's like really serious going on in your life, you need to fucking call me. Like, don't put it on Facebook. And then like, when I see you and you're like, oh, remember, like I just got back from wherever, or my grandma or my dog died. Like, I don't fucking know. You didn't tell me. Well, I put it on Facebook. I don't give a
fuck. Oh, I know. Facebook. That's the thing. I just said to my son, I said to my son yesterday, you know that before you would have to call somebody to act, like there was no texting. He was like, how long ago? I'm like, you would have to call. I just said to my wife, remember when you would have to call and say like, is it okay if Ben comes over to play?
Yeah.
Instead, you know, it's like just the disconnect is the thing that I know it's the way of the world. And I know, especially the way that the music industry is working right now. There's a certain game that you just have to play, and I understand it well, but I don't understand it. Yeah. I know what I have to do, but I miss it, man. I miss it too.
I really miss it too. And I kind of fall down some of the rabbit holes sometimes where I'm like, it kind of like pisses me off in a sense. It's like, aren't we like really close? And I don't know that this is going on, but all these losers on Facebook know what's going on in your life that you don't even
have to. They know. I'm glad they know. I know nothing. I just play the game. I just keep going.
All right. So if you were to pick any 80s front man, who would you like to be for one day?
80s front man?
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, man.
You can throw in the 90s there too, because I know you liked a lot of hip hop in the 90s.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of something. Well, listen, I know what I would say right off the bat. I would say probably one of the Gallagher brothers in the heights of when Definitely Maybe came out and that entire culture shifted, right? So I'm a big Brit rock fan. I'm still a Noel Gallagher fan to this day. He's one of my favorite songwriters. But to see how they lived in excess and everything was just party crazy, living like legends for that moment. I would never want it now, but for a day,
it would be really cool. I think artists are going to miss that.
Right? Yeah. There's no rock stars anymore.
No. Mm-mm. That's why we keep going to rock concerts. So they're going to be like Kiss 90 years old still, because there's nobody coming into the realm to go and even so much as even really do a stage show anymore.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I mean, and I'm a performer, right? But it's like, no, I'm not that guy. I need to go see that guy, right? It's like everybody one younger artist, I was going to mention this earlier too, but Sam Fender is a British kid who put out one of my favorite records of last year. Well, I guess 2 years ago now. Oh my God. But we went and saw him and it was like a proper rock and roll show. Like it's just rock and roll. In fact, his biggest influence is Bruce Springsteen. And we went on our anniversary and we were both like, wow, it felt like rock and roll came back for the night. I don't know where it went now, but Idols was another band too. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but I went and saw Idols alone and it was like, oh, I can feel it again, you know, like just angry, spit in your face, rock and roll again. Right. But then again, I'll listen to some piano jazz in the morning too.
Good. Your kids get all sorts. I love it. All right.
Oh, they get it.
Needle in the Hay, Elliot Smith.
I was lucky to see Elliot 3 times.
Wow.
I have his tattoo, meaning not his face, but the tattoo that he had on his arm. He was, and even still to this day, is everything to me. Elliot Smith was not only one of the reasons that I wanted to take playing and performing a little bit more seriously. For some reason, I'm attracted to the darker, tragic tale of his. Nothing makes me more emotional. And the funny thing is, too, a lot of people don't realize it, how many jovial, happy, awesome rock songs that he had as well. He's always painted with this sad song troubadour kind of label. And like I said, I got to see him live. I drove to DC to see him just in his acoustic guitar. I saw the full band play in London, Ontario. I saw them play in Toronto, Ontario. I still listen to Elliot Smith all the time. I own everything that he's ever done, not only on vinyl, but I go deeper with B-sides. It was just the anniversary since he passed away last year. And I did a radio tribute thing that I produced from my home and got to send it to one of the local college radio stations or university stations here. And I think he's written some of my very favorite music. And I have a lot of friends that I've been connected to through his music. My friend Kyle and I met on a Elliott Smith message board when he was still alive. I remember the day that he died, and just, that was the first year that I started dating my wife, and she was really concerned because it messed me up so much. And every year that the anniversary comes up, I make a night of it. I surround myself with his records. I used to drink Johnny Walker Red on that night. Elliott Smith is, I would say, my favorite solo artist of all time. Not necessarily my favorite band, but I can't say enough. I'm sure I have already. But and that song there, what isn't, I mean, that's the first song of his that I learned to play on guitar. I know many, many of his songs on guitar now, but well, I mean, my version of them. But that song in particular ended up on the Royal Tenenbaums in a very, you know, pivotal scene in the movie. And I just thought that was kind of a good, I think people would know that song. And yeah, I'll stop talking about it because it makes me a little emotional. But I can't say enough about Elliott Smith. Absolutely.
I think that's amazing that you share something like that. What I hope that every artist realizes is just exactly how you just spoke about that artist. I know that it's like you get to see it, right? When they're touring or they become so famous, or you read autobiographies and it's just like the fans are crazy and all of this kind of stuff. And I think just because I just like, I'm reading this Madonna book and it's like psychotically out of control. And I just watched, you know, I made my husband watch the Elvis movie, even though it's not 100% portrays him, but more or less,
yep,
the fans,
still awesome, though,
all of this kind of stuff, where sometimes I think that they can lose sight of how much people really adore them. And I so appreciate you, the way you just spoke about an artist, because that is, they just get lost sometimes. And the reason why if they knew exactly how everybody felt, I feel like maybe they wouldn't get so lost.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I remember thinking, I've met a lot of the people that I would put on the top of the list for me. You know, I've met some of my very favorite artists, and I'm sure if I tried, I could have when he was around. And that's kind of a pill that I have to swallow. I remember seeing his tour bus out front, and I wasn't in radio at that time. I think actually when he put out his last record, I was getting into radio, but regardless, the connections that I've had and, you know, in the past through being a music director and being on the radio, I've got some clout to be able to meet some of my very favorite artists. And had that been the case, I would have loved to have been able to have, like, I met Chris Cornell, not to be the name dropper guy, you know what I mean? But people that we've all loved and lost, I've had that opportunity before, and I didn't do that with Elliott Smith. And that's why it's so important to me that his music lives on, and that I, you know, that I do, you know, promote, you know, shamelessly promote his music and tell people how much I adore him, and continue to do everything that I can to tell people, oh, you don't know this record? You haven't listened to XO before? You know, everybody, you know, knows the Good Will Hunting story because he's all over that soundtrack and stuff. But yeah, I'm gushing again, so I'll stop.
So cool. Obviously working in radio, you did meet a lot of people. Who was somebody that you were like, I don't want to say admire because then it might put a negative spin on it, but maybe somebody you admired that you met that you're like, meh, or maybe somebody you did not admire, but you were like, wow, that guy's really, or that gal is really cool.
I mean, the Chris Cornell story is actually really funny just because, so I'll tell it really quickly. And Annette, I feel like I need to be honest with you. I'm really, really embarrassed, but my phone just told me I have 20% left. So I'm not quite sure what that means as far as our list goes. So I'm really sorry.
Song? Hey, that's
okay.
All
okay. I'm just letting if anything, I'm honest to a fault. So I would hate for this to go.
I love it.
I don't want to rush anything. So when I was working at this one station, my program director had called me and said, listen, I need you to be in Toronto tomorrow. Soundgarden is doing a very private press tour. And this is when they were just putting out their final record called King Animal. And the funny thing is that my friend Brendan, who has been in bands with me before as well, who I love to this day, I still talk to him all the time, but he was the biggest Chris Cornell / Soundgarden fan of all time. So when I was speaking to his record label, I asked if I could bring somebody, and they said, well, if you want to film it, you should bring somebody to film for your website stuff. So I brought my friend Brendan under the guise that he was our cameraman to film the interview. Now, that being said, I didn't know if I was going to meet Chris Cornell. In Theater A was Kim and Matt from Soundgarden. And Theater B was Ben and Chris. So when we got there, there was literally some woman with a clipboard. Okay, you're okay, da da da. So Matt, you're in Theater A. So I'm like, oh shit, that's going to be Chris Cornell. You know, I'm going to meet Chris Cornell. And it was in a private movie theater in this really swanky hotel. So we go in and we end up sitting and I do my interview and it's very candid.
Uh-oh, I lost you.
And it is, you know, digital camera that I gave him or whatever, you know, because he's the press camera guy. So after all said and done, this is so funny. So after all said and done, him and Chris, I got photos because he brought vinyl to be signed. And Chris is looking at the vinyl and going like, oh my God, where did you get this? I don't think I've even like seen this since we did it. And they're shooting the shit, blah, blah, blah. So after all is said and done, we get autographs and photos with everybody. And Chris Cornell is just the most humble, sweet, loving person. He was just really, really gracious to be there. Ben Shepherd, the bass player, same thing. And so afterwards, the label wanted to see the video that we shot. And he's shaking so much during the entire interview that the label's like, who the fuck did you bring to do this video? And like it would have been better if I said like, oh, the camera didn't work, you know, but we tried to watch the footage and it was just the most hilarious thing of all time. But, you know, all in all that he not only got to meet his idol, as far as that goes, we both got autographed copies of the record by everybody in the band. And it was just a really special moment because I didn't know what to expect. I was a Bad Motorfinger fan, a big Super Unknown fan as well. Fell on Black Days, one of my favorite, you know, radio rock songs of all time. But to be able to be there up close and personal, I never, ever would have expected to have things go the way they did with him because he, and again, here's the rock star cliche thing, but he had it together. You know, it wasn't like one of those things where it's like, man, there's a dark shadow over this guy. Nothing like that. And not to be a conspiracy theorist, I still don't think that we really know what happened there in my heart of hearts, but that was a great loss. And I was very, very lucky that I got to meet Chris Cornell. That was really important to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Well, Matthew, I so appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us today on Music Junkies. We will like, subscribe, follow you, stalk you. Hopefully we'll get your address in Toronto and come visit.
Yeah.
Have some drinks. That'd be awesome.
You got it. Let's do it.
That'd be awesome. But before I let you go, I'd love for you to leave us with some words of wisdom.
Wow. Words of wisdom. Any other people that know me be like, does he have any of those? You know, for the longest time, I've just taken life way too seriously. And I don't do New Year's resolutions, but I feel like everybody needs to relax and love each other a little bit more. The past few years have been crazy for everybody. Everybody dealt with it differently. I think the future is going to be even kind of stranger. My words of wisdom, take it easy on yourself. Breathe a little bit. Everybody's human and just fucking love each other, man. You know, that's all.
I love that.
Put down your phone.
Yeah.
You know? Put down your phone and turn off the TV. If anything, like we've been talking about earlier, go put a record on and hang out with your family and be in the moment and quit scrolling.
I love it. Scrolling. Well, again, Kathy, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed yourself today as well. And
loved it.
Yeah. I'm so looking forward to having you again on the show. Please send me your stuff where we can promote the shit out of you constantly.
I would be honored, and I am honored, and I love the show, and I will always listen to it and get the updates, and you and I will keep in touch whether you want to or not. I'm now your friend.
I love it. Thanks for listening today. Hope you enjoyed the show. New episodes out every Monday. Please share with a friend and subscribe because you want to. And like me because you like me. Leave a comment so we can connect. And if you have a great playlist and you want to share, I'd love to have you on the show. Please reach out to me on Instagram at The Music Junkies Podcast.